Hello and welcome to the Applicant Update webinar. Thanks for joining us. I'd like to cover a few things before we begin. This webinar is being recorded. Recordings and supporting materials will be published on the new GTLD microsite. The running time of the webinar is 90 minutes. We'll start with a presentation and end with a question and answer session. You can ask a question via phone or in the Adobe Connect Q&A pod. Phone questions will be given priority, and questions submitted online will be answered if time permits. Dial-in numbers can be found on the webinar page of the microsite at http://newgtlds.icann.org/webinars. The conference ID is Applicant Webinar Update. To enter the phone queue, dial *1. To exit the queue, dial *2. If you're on speakerphone, please pick up the handset before asking your question. And now I'd like to turn it over to Christine Ouellette, Vice President, GTLD Operations.
Thank you, Nicole. Thanks, everybody. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning. Thank you for joining us today. I see we have nearly 100 participants. That's wonderful to see. Today we are going to cover several topics. We'll go through an update on the program. We'll start by covering initial evaluation, then moving on to objections and dispute resolution. We'll discuss GAC advice and where we're at in that process. We'll touch on contracting and the registry agreement. We'll also cover pre-delegation testing, string contention resolution, as well as several projects around rights protection and operational support. We will end with the overall program timeline, and then we will have time for questions at the end. I expect that we will cover content in 30 to 45 minutes, and then we will have at least 45 minutes for questions at the end. Next slide. So to begin to discuss initial evaluation results, I would like to invite Trang Nguyen, the Director of GTLD Operations, who is responsible for all of the evaluation work, to present several slides here on initial evaluation. I'm sure many of you applicants know Trang and are very familiar. She's managing this work for us for the last several months. So, Trang?
Thanks, Christine. Hello, everyone. So I'm just going to run through some status updates on initial evaluation from the Beijing meeting. Some new stats for you. As of today, we have published IE results for the first 300 priorities. As you can see on the slide there, 244 of the 300 have passed. We have one going to extended evaluation. And there are 47 apps that are still currently held due to pending change request, CQ, or an outreach. And in the top 30 priorities, we have 8 apps that have withdrawn. As Christine had previously mentioned, there are 3 possible outcomes for initial evaluation: an application that passed and has no contention, not subject of a GAC advice, and have no objections, can then proceed to contracting. An application that is eligible for extended evaluation means that it has passed the DNS, string similarity, background screening reviews, and may have not provided sufficient information for the evaluators to pass them on financial, technical, geographic names, or registry services reviews. And an application that is ineligible for further review did not pass either DNS, string similarity review, geographic names review, or background screening. Next slide, please. I have a graph on this slide that shows you sort of the projected IE results release schedule. What you see in the red line there is our projected schedule. The couple things that you can infer from this graph: one is that the last date of IE results release is currently planned for August 30th. And the second thing that you can infer from the graph is that beginning May 24th, we'll be issuing IE results at 100 apps per week. Also on the slide there, you can see sort of the schedules for the upcoming weeks in May. Next slide, please. This is a familiar chart that you have seen in past webinars. It provides the overall status of initial evaluation. The pre-CQ eval column essentially shows those applications that the evaluators are still evaluating and have not written CQs for. Pending CQ response are the applications where they are with the applicant to provide a response to a CQ. Post-CQ eval are applications that are currently back with the evaluators for evaluation of the CQ response. The preliminary panel results column shows those applications where the evaluators have already delivered IE results to ICANN, but we may not have published. Currently, we have 57 applications that have withdrawn. Next, please. There are a couple of things I want to mention to you on this slide. One is that the next major milestone that we have under initial evaluation is the May 22nd date. That is the date of that we anticipate to be releasing all, complete release of all CQs for all applications. So that's the next big major milestone for us. The other date that, is the date that I have mentioned previously is the August 30th date. That is the date of the end of initial evaluation. So for those applicants that have geographic CQs pending, that means that that's the date where the response to the geographic CQs are due back to the panel. Next slide, please. Okay. That's it for me, Christine. I'll throw it back to you.
Thank you, Trey. I would only add, in terms of initial evaluation results and the overall process, we're very excited here at ICANN and on the team. We only have two more weeks of clarifying questions being sent out initially to applicants. So that will also be a major milestone, wrapping up clarifying questions CQs this month. So thank you so much, Trang. Moving on to the next topic of objections and dispute resolution. Here you see a graphic that depicts the phases and timeline, if you will, for the objections and dispute resolution process. The dispute announcement was published by ICANN on April 12th. Listing all of the verified objections that had been verified by the dispute resolution service providers. After that, all of the filing notifications were sent by the dispute resolution service providers, DRSPs, to the objected to applicants. In an ongoing basis, the DRSPs continue to manage applicant responses to those objection notices. We expect that those responses from applicants will be going, starting to come back to the DRSPs the week of May 15th. Because the notices from the DRSPs went out not all on one day, but over time, the applicants' responses to the DRSPs are then being responded to over time. So you see in the timeline, we start with the admissible filing notifications from the DRSP. That's where we started with April 15th. Applicants have 30 days to respond. I want to clarify, however, it's not, everything is not due May 15th. It's 30 days based on the notification date that you received from the DRSP. From there, the DRSPs begin their expert panel selections for all of those objections which were responded to. and they are processing. They will then process consolidation requests and curing. You also see here that listed there are several circumstances that affect the timing of the overall process. First is the applicant and objector interactions. When they respond, the timing of their payments, et cetera. If applicants respond to objections earlier, things get started earlier. If they take the entire 30 days, the process is based on that response date. It also is dependent upon the complexity of objections. If there are consolidations, meaning multiple objections on the same grounds are consolidated together by the DRSP, that is something that they determine, then that may also impact the overall timing. And then finally, there are various other supplementary activities that can occur, hearings, additional submissions, mediation, etc. So this overall timeline is a general timeline of the different phases of activity. Again, we encourage all applicants that are the subject of an objection to reference the documentation that they received from the dispute resolution service providers to clarify the timing of their cases. Moving on to GAC advice. The GAC communique, the GAC Beijing communique, which included GAC advice for Applied for Strings, was received by ICANN on the 11th of April, and the link to that communique in its entirety is available via the link on the slide. The new GTLD program committee is seeking public comment on the safeguard advice portion of that communique. That was published for public comment on April 23rd. It was a full 42-day public comment period, 21-day comment, 21-day response, and that period closes on June 4th, 2013. You can see the announcement and link to the public comment through the second link on the page. Additionally, applicants, as per the applicant guidebook, have the opportunity to respond to the board directly on the GAC advice for their spring or in general. So the new GTLD program published the GAC advice on the 18th of April, notifying applicants that they had the opportunity to respond. We included instructions on how to respond. We're encouraging applicants to use our new customer service portal and to submit the response, including the application ID, applicant name, etc., with those responses. Those applicant responses to GAC advice are due tomorrow at midnight UTC or 59 UTC. That is 5 p.m. Pacific time, so just over 24 hours. I would like to mention that applicants are not required to submit a response to GAC advice, but it is an option available to all applicants. In particular, there is safeguard advice that is relevant and applicable to all applications. So any applicant can respond to the board with their feedback on GAC advice. We will be consolidating that feedback and providing it to the board for their review and consideration. Any applicant as well is also welcome to submit feedback as per the new GTLD request for comment on the safeguard advice through the public comment forum. That public comment forum is also open to non-applicants. Anyone in the community can also comment on the GAC safeguard advice. Moving on to contracting and the registry agreement. As I'm sure most of you are aware, the a revised registry agreement was published for public comment on April 29th. Again, this was published for 42 days with a public comment close date of 20 May and then the comment reply period closing 11 June. You can get to that public comment period via a new page on the new GTLD microsite, which was added this past month. It's a page specifically around contracting and the registry agreement. All applicants are welcome, as is the public, to comment on the registry agreement via that public comment form. We will be holding a webinar in early June to discuss the contracting process. So this webinar won't be specifically to discuss the registry agreement itself. Rather, it will be an opportunity for the ICANN team to begin presenting the process for contracting and the mechanisms and how we will interact with applicants that are eligible to execute contracts. So our intent is to inform applicants on information requirements, things that will be needed to be exchanged during the contracting process, letters of credit, updates, signatory information, etc. So webinar details, we are expecting to have more information by the end of next week on the June webinar. So keep an eye out for that. We'll have an announcement, and that will be on the microsite and noticed on the contracting page as well as our standard webinar page, I anticipate. Moving on to pre-delegation testing. We are in the midst of beta testing. This is a term we coined post-Beijing. Prior to Beijing, in the late March, early April timeframe, we held a pilot. We invited 12 applicants to participate in that pilot, 9 of which did participate. Those 9 participants were invited to be the first participants in the pre-delegation beta testing. But ultimately, all applicants representing all RFPs will be invited to participate in the beta testing. And the intention of this beta testing effort is to assist applicants and RFPs to prepare for successful pre-delegation testing once they actually reach contracting. So at this point, official pre-delegation testing is still anticipated to occur after each applicant has signed and executed the registry agreement. However, in light of the fact that we don't anticipate the registry agreements to be finalized for some time now, we're going to use this opportunity during May and June to perform this beta testing and keep progress going to allow applicants and registry service providers to be to prepare their infrastructures for PDT testing. We have listened to the feedback from the pilot, and we are making the beta testing interactive with the service provider. We are going to report results to all participants, and at present we have 10 testing slots available per week. We can adjust that depending on the response and interest level we receive to beta testing. So in terms of progress, we do have beta testing underway. I think we invited those 9 pilot participants last week to begin beta testing. And now, as of this week, we have sent invitations to an additional 35 applicants. We are inviting applicants with the lowest priority number from each registry service provider to participate. The process for pre-delegation testing and thus the beta version of pre-delegation testing begins with data entry. So data entry for this first group would begin tomorrow, the 10th of May, with testing to begin, the technical testing to begin on the 20th of May with that first new group of beta testing participants. The documentation for pre-delegation testing has been updated, and it's been posted to the PDT page on the new GTLD microsite, and you see a link there. There's been a subject of some discussion and debate in circles. I heard this topic in Beijing, which is the DNS Anycast testing that is described as part of the pre-delegation testing. We understand that some in the community have concerns about the methodology of the test, and we are exploring alternatives to our current testing approaches. We would certainly consider adding additional approaches for testing Anycast, but we are presently proceeding with the Anycast testing methodology we have at present. Moving on to string contention resolution. So as many of you know, I'm sure, there are two primary methods for string contention resolution, one being community priority evaluation, or as we described on the slide, CPE, the second being auctions, ICANN auctions. So as I mentioned in Beijing, we intend to move forward with contention proceedings in September of this year. We've also listened to feedback we received from the community applicants about their desire to elect CPE early. So we are going to offer the community applicants a mechanism to elect CPE in June. We anticipate that that will be via the new customer portal we have. We will be providing applicants more information on the procedures and methods to perform that election before June. So by the end of this month, we'll have that information published. So we anticipate that applicants are only eligible to elect community priority evaluation after they have successfully passed evaluation. So once applicants pass initial evaluation, they will be eligible to elect CPE. If applicants do not pass initial evaluation and go on through extended evaluation, once they pass extended evaluation, they will still have the opportunity to elect CPE once they successfully pass EE. As far as auctions go, we anticipate that we will have some contention sets that do not have CPE community applicants in the contention sets, as well as some contention sets with no applicants going to extended evaluation under objection, et cetera, et cetera. So we intend to offer auctions as early as we are operationally ready, sometime after September or into October is the date we've previously communicated. So we will have multiple auction cycles going on. So the graphic here depicts that we have initial evaluation. Then applicants will be granted at least 2 weeks beyond the end of initial evaluation. So we're tentatively planning that for September 15th to elect community priority evaluation. Applicants will also be able to request an ICANN auction after the end of initial evaluation. Then, as applicants go through extended evaluation, we will have another cycle of electing CPE and auctions. So this will be iterative, and I'm sure we will have more cycles than are even depicted on this graphic. Moving on, we'll cover a few of the rights protection mechanism projects that are underway. First, we'll speak about the Trademark Clearinghouse, and then we'll briefly touch on URS, as well as the post-delegation dispute resolution mechanisms. So the Trademark Clearinghouse Verification Service was launched on the 26th of March. Rights holders can submit their trademark data via the Trademark Clearinghouse at that website. We've had a fair amount of activity to date. At this point, we have 101 registered agents, 505 trademark holders are also registered. We have approximately 1,600 records in the system. 832 of them are in process. 481 marks have been verified, and 287 were deemed to be incorrect. We would like to note that marks have been registered in the Trademark Clearinghouse, not only in ASCII format, but also in Chinese, Japanese, and Cyrillic scripts. There are also several ongoing activities with the Trademark Clearinghouse. As we look ahead, the Sunrise and Claims implementations, as we mentioned in Beijing, we're looking at July of 2013 for the Sunrise capability to be operational, and by August 2013 for the claims capability to be operational. we're currently working with the community on the rights protection mechanism document, the development of the document. Karen Lentz has published that on the Trademark Clearinghouse site. I believe we had a webinar. She held a webinar on that a week or two ago to review the document. So we are continuing to review input that we've received on the document, and we're in the process of developing a new version for publication. We are also working on the implementation of the straw man model. Specifically the addition of 50 domain name labels, which have been previously abused. Working with the vendors, both Deloitte and IBM, to have them implement the enhancements and modifications to trademark functionality as prescribed in the straw man model. Moving on to URS, or Uniform Rapid Suspension, we have announced two providers, the NAF, the National Arbitration Forum, and I believe just after Beijing we announced an additional provider, the Asian Domain Name Dispute Resolution Center, ADNDRC. We expect that additional providers may also be appointed as we move forward with the program. In terms of procedures and rules, the general URS procedures and rules have been established and published on the ICANN website. Additionally, NAF has published supplemental rules for URS, and those are posted on the NAF website. The ADNDRC is also developing supplemental rules for URS, and we are expecting that those will be published in June. The first URS provider is still scheduled to be operational by the end of June, and we intend to have a demonstration available of the URS interface at the ICANN 47 meeting in Durban. You can get more information and the latest information on URS at the link on the new GTLD microsite. In terms of post-delegation dispute resolution procedures, or as we say, PDDRP, we have issued two RFPs. These were issued on the 30th of April, seeking providers for the post-delegation dispute resolution process. One is for the trademark dispute resolution, and one is for registry restriction dispute resolution. The deadline for response to both RFPs is the 31st of May, and we anticipate selecting and announcing providers by the end of June. There's a third dispute resolution process that has been discussed, the PIC-DRP, which pertains to public interest commitments. A public comment period has just concluded on the PIC-DRP, so we are still in discussions with the community to finalize the PIC-DRP procedures, in so much as the registry agreement is also out for public comment. We expect that that any feedback to the registry agreement and Spec 11, the PIC specification, may also impact the PIC-DRP process. You can look for more updates at the link provided on the page. I will cover briefly two of our operational support mechanisms. We continue to work on eBurro as well as SLA monitoring. So the eBurro, or emergency backend registry operators, have been selected and were announced during the ICANN 46 meeting in Beijing. The three providers announced were Neustar, Nominet, and CNNIC. These providers were in-house in Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago for a eBurro process design workshop, which was very productive. And we are anticipating that we will have at least one eBurro provider go live by August of 2013. The additional eBurro providers will likely become operational in a phased approach. For more information, here is the link to the eBurro page on the new GTLD microsite. SLA monitoring. The SLA monitoring platform will be operated by ICANN to verify on a real-time basis the service level requirements compliance of registry operators with Spec 10 of the registry agreement. There is a service provider, Zavix, that is developing the platform for us. Phase one of the SLA monitoring tool and platform will be available in August. The capabilities will include full DNS testing, accepting the DNS update time, as well as WHOIS and ECP testing using standard TCP port testing. Phase two is anticipated for October with full ECP and WHOIS testing, as well as full correlational testing. And finally, I believe we have one last slide. Timeline. So the timeline I'm sharing here today is only slightly modified from what was published, I believe, on April 24th to the new GTLD microsite. And this is not intended to be new information, rather simply a clarification of the timeline. So as you know, we've already discussed, clarifying questions will be issued for a few more weeks. IE results are scheduled through August. Then we begin string contention resolution in September, and extended evaluation is anticipated to begin in October. None of those has changed, by the way. The line item that has changed just slightly is the gold bar that depicts the board when the board is expected to address GAC advice. I am not, the board has not, or the new G committee has not set a timeline or published a timeline for their response to GAC advice. So I am simply reflecting our best estimate and understanding as to when the board will likely address and consider GAC advice. Given that they we've published Annex 1 on safeguard advice for public comment, and that public comment period ends on the 4th of June, by the time those public comments are analyzed and synthesized and the board takes action, we have aligned the board timing to address GAC advice to align with the timing where as to when we expect the board to, will also be likely to approve the registry agreement. As those are finalized in the second half of June, we then expect that we would move rapidly on to contracting. You see that we are, the next line reflects that we are doing the pre-delegation beta testing in the May and June timeframes, with the official pre-delegation testing beginning very rapidly after contracting. The TMCH Sunrise and Claim Systems being available in July, and then, as I mentioned, the Claim System in August, the and then the URS and EBRA lines reflect what we've already communicated today. So this is my last slide. We will open it up for questions and comments. Do we have questions? What we typically do, what we've been doing for the last several months, is we have been taking questions from the phone queue. We are being told we have not one in the phone queue. So everyone's starting to dial in. So we'll take questions from the phone queue, followed up by questions from the Q&A pod in Adobe.
Thank you. And our first question comes from Mark Anderson. Please go ahead.
Hi, Christine. This is Mark Anderson from Verisign. I have a question for you on Trademark Clearinghouse. You provided an update on when the sunrise period and the claims periods will commence, but can you provide any information about when a test environment might be available for back-end registry operators?
So the question was, when would the Trademark Clearinghouse sunrise and claims periods commence? And when might a test environment be available for the Trademark Clearinghouse? So the as we mentioned on the Trademark Clearinghouse page, the operational readiness for the sunrise period is anticipated for to be July. So we'll be operationally ready to begin sunrises in early July. And then by early August, we would intend and expect that the claims functionality for the Trademark Clearinghouse would be available. In terms of a test environment, I believe that the certainly by July, we would be able to and prepared to offer integration testing for registry operators. Mark, can you hold one moment?
Certainly.
Thank you. Our next question.
Oh, I'm so sorry, operator. I want to just make sure that I complete the response to Mark. So the current timeline is we'd anticipate offering the integration opportunity to registries, registrars in that same July timeframe. If we are operationally ready, if the vendor in this case is operationally ready to do so earlier, we would certainly make that available.
Thank you, Christine.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Donna Austin. Please go ahead.
Hi, Christine.
Oh, hi, Donna. Thank you. Go ahead.
I've got two questions for you. One relates to the GAC advice. So I understand from your slide that you said that public comment was being sought on the safeguards only. And I understand from Amy Stathos was at a Inter meeting in Dallas recently, and apparently she said that the board was actually seeking comment on all elements of the GAC advice. Could you actually confirm whether that's correct or not?
Donna, this is Christine.
Yep.
Thank you very much. So your question is about the public comment on GAC advice.
Correct.
So the public comment forum and what is published is asking for public comment on a particular section of GAC advice pertaining to the safeguard advice. However, what I believe Amy was likely referring to is the opportunity that all have applicants have to respond to GAC advice directly to the board and on any aspect of the GAC advice. And the mechanism for doing that is through the customer portal or the new GTLD customer service department via email.
Okay, so the public comment specifically relates to safeguard advice.
That is correct.
Okay, so my second question, and this may appear to be a joke, but it's not. In the guidebook, it says that subsequent application rounds are expected to begin within 1 year of the close of the application submission period for the initial round, which is almost coming up to 12 months now. Can you give us any indication of whether ICANN has done any kind of planning or whether they've thought about what their intention is with regard to proceeding with the second round?
Thank you, Donna. So in terms of timing, the guidebook also calls for ICANN to perform a full review of the program and provide a report to the community on the new GTLD program. I don't anticipate that another round could begin until that activity is also completed. So I am not aware of any discussions at present of scheduling an additional round. So I can't speak for the board, and that would ultimately be at their discretion. Thank you, Donna.
Okay. Thanks, Christine.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Craig Schwartz. Please go ahead.
Hey, Christine. How are you?
Good. How are you, Craig?
Good. So my question is about the information on community priority evaluation. And if I understood correctly, it sounds like eligible community applicants can elect in June, but that the actual reviews would not start still until September. Is that correct?
That is currently the schedule. And as I mentioned in Beijing, we're working to become operationally ready to perform community priority evaluations and auctions. By operationally ready, I mean that includes the vendors are in place and prepared to execute those evaluations, that we have the internal procedures in place and the staff trained, and we also have whatever tools to facilitate the evaluation in place. If we are able to
be operationally ready prior to September, we would certainly entertain conducting community priority evaluations earlier, but at present, it's the September timeframe that we are confident we will be able to meet.
So the benefit of electing in June is that if you're actually ready to go in August, you'll be queued up.
Yes, that's correct. Electing community priority evaluation will also entail submitting fees, so we'll be working on the procedures around the fee submission to maintain your place in the queue for community priority evaluation. But again, the guidebook allows all applicants until after evaluation to elect community priority evaluation. So this is really giving the applicants the opportunity to elect CPE early is in response to feedback I received in Beijing that community applicants were interested in electing early. So we're trying to be responsive to that request.
Yeah, just to clarify, I think the request was to elect and perform early, and it sounds like that may be a possibility depending on ICANN's operational readiness. So thanks for the response.
Thank you, Craig.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Jeffrey Eckhouse. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, Christine. I wanted to ask a question about your timeline, and one of the items that I believe may be missing from that timeline, and if you can comment on that, and that is the issue of the interaction between the certificate authorities and that 120-day window, I believe, that was in the bulletin number 57, and how that plays in to the timelines and how that is going to work, because I haven't seen that commented on in the review by the certificate authorities, the 120-day review. So can you comment on that and how that fits into the timeline and where, you know, ICANN stands on that? Because I'm not sure if that was just a recommendation or if ICANN has decided to implement that as part of the security and stability review. So would you be able to comment on that at this time?
Thank you, Jeff. So in terms of the 120-day timeline, I think we have the timeline back up in Adobe. So the 120-day timeline is a timeline set out by the CA Browser Forum in terms of when they are recommending to their members to revoke existing and previously issued certificates. That 120 days, that 120-day window for revocation of certificates is intended to begin once each applicant signs their registry agreement. So if an applicant for that table mm-hmm. signs on August 1st, then the 120-day window begins on August 1st. ICANN will be publishing the list of signed registry agreements and making that available to the CA Browser Forum and their members. So that would be where that 120 days begins on this timeline. I will tell you, we are working on a separate timeline, Jeff, that I think would be of interest for you, and I don't have it today, but when we do have it, we'll certainly publish it. I'm calling it an earliest path timeline. So it is the timeline for the theoretical first new GTLD applicant to move through the entire program process. So what would the earliest theoretical date be to move through contracting, pre-delegation testing, the IANA process towards delegation, Sunrise claims, etc. So I would anticipate that on that earliest path timeline, we could also reflect the 120-day revocation window.
Yeah, that would be ideal, and that would basically show after the mandatory sunrise period when the first, let's call it the first domain that was applied for in sunrise, when that was, you know, when that was actually, after it's been approved, then that could actually go live. And that would be in your, I believe that you're saying that would be in your, hopefully in your timeline.
Correct.
Okay, and just one last question because on this point, because I wasn't sure if it was clear because there was a mention of only 50-something strings or TLDs that would be, that they had a mention of, but is every single TLD, no matter what, so dot table, you know, is not the same as, you know, say dot home or some of the others, so will every single TLD have to go through that 120-day window?
So the 120-day window, just to clarify, is not at this point being, it's not part of the program. It is a revocation window, an exposure period, if you will, that is relevant to any TLD potentially. And so that's, at this point, it is not part of the overall program timeline. But what we're saying is that it begins, it's the CA browser form timeline.
Right. Okay, yeah, it is just a part, sort of a dependency in a part, and I don't know if you just said, sorry, just talking, when was, did you say you believe this timeline would be published, the one you just discussed?
You know, I'm hoping, certainly within the next month, I'm hoping in the next week or two.
No, that'd be great. Okay.
It's something, I mean, I get questions on it all the time, so.
Great.
I
think everyone's looking forward to seeing that. I think that would be very helpful. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. So we're going to, if you give us one moment, if you'd hold on. We have over half an hour. We will begin to take questions from the pod. That was our last question from the phone queue. If you give us just a moment to transition. Yeah. Okay, the first question in the pod is from Tim Switzer. Christine, do you have any update on our discussion in Beijing about what ICANN may do and the process to determine concerning the likely excess funds from the application fees? So, Tim, thank you for the question. I recall a conversation that in Beijing about this. So I don't know that it's been determined yet if there will be an excess of funds or what any excess would amount to. ICANN is currently going through and completing the budgeting process I think by the end of the fiscal year, the board approves an updated budget, which will include a revised forecast for the program. And at this point, I've not been party to any conversations by the board or the new GTLD program committee about discussing excess fees. So, sorry, I don't have any more information for you on that.
Thanks, Christine. The next question comes from Elizabeth Finberg. For registries operating more than one TLD, must the registry have a dedicated website for each TLD with who is, DNSSEC, info, etc.? Or alternatively, may the registry operate a single website with subpages for each TLD containing ICANN required functionality and content?
Okay. Elizabeth, it's I'm sure, a very valid question that I'm not prepared to respond to. I'm sorry, it's just a bit too technical for me. I'm going to ask my team. We'll put that on the list of questions. So when we document a list of Q&A, we'll get an answer to that after the webinar. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Next question is from Henry Chan. Will applicants be tested in accordance with the registry agreement executed during PDT? That means, for example, a brand TOD may have different arrangement with ICANN on the data escrow in the RA. Would the PBT test the brand TOD according to what is agreed in the registry agreement, or the applicant would still need to run the standard test? So, thank you, Henry. What I can say is that at this point, we have not considered diverging from the requirements for registries on the five critical registry functions that are required in Spec 10. So that is currently the basis of pre-delegation testing. But that's something I can take to the team, but that is not something we're not anticipating at this point. Thank you. Thanks, Christine. Next question is from Jim Prendergast. In Beijing, there was some confusion about whether or not ICANN staff had coordinated with the DRSPs in allowing objections that had been filed late, file without proper attachments, or file without copying the proper parties to proceed. Christine told NPAC that ICANN had not intervened in those decisions and that the DRSP had made those on their own. The correspondence from one of the DRSPs notes that an extension of the timeline was done in consultation with ICANN. Could Christine or someone else please clarify what role ICANN played in these non-compliant objections proceedings? Thank you. So, to clarify, in terms of the objections and the dispute proceedings, we had a number of issues raised both by applicants as well as the DRSPs. Both applicants and DRSPs contacted ICANN regarding questions about late filings. What ICANN did was we asked the DRSPs to indicate how they would handle such circumstances and suggested that whatever their decision was, that it should be consistent across providers. The DRSPs then discussed amongst themselves, and they agreed on granting a 5-minute grace period. The DRSPs informed ICANN of the decision, and ICANN did not object to the DRSP's resolution. So if the idea or if the understanding was that the DRSPs consulted with ICANN, it was that it was in this reference to this situation. They asked what to do. We told them to decide amongst themselves. They came back with an answer, and we said, okay. So that was the extent of the consultation with ICANN. So we're confident that the dispute resolution service providers are complying with the guidelines in the guidebook, and we're leaving it in their hands to resolve ongoing issues regarding filing fees, extensions, the length of objections, etc. So we're relying on the DRSPs to comply with the guidelines in the guidebook. So we're going to take a few questions from the phone queue now.
Thank you. We do have a question from Yasmin Omer. Please go ahead.
Hi, Christine.
Hello. How are you?
Good, thanks. Thank you. So I have a couple of questions. The first one relates to contract execution. So I know that you're going to provide an earliest pass timeline, and thank you, we welcome that. But are you able to provide an estimate of when the earliest possible date would be to execute the registry agreement?
Yasmin, I'm so sorry. I'm having difficulty
I think the connection is poor. It's just a bit garbled. Could I ask you to repeat the question perhaps just a bit slower, and we'll all try to listen on this end.
Sure. So we note that you're publishing the, well, we'll be publishing shortly the earliest pass timeline, and thank you for doing that. But are you able to provide the earliest possible estimate of when the registry agreement may be executed by an applicant?
So if I understood correctly, Yasmin, you're asking what would likely be the earliest possible date for applicants to execute the registry agreement?
Correct.
So the earliest possible date would be dependent on the public comment period closing, the public comment period on the safeguard advice. Staff will be summarizing those public comments and providing those to the board. It's also dependent on the registry agreement public comment period closing in, I believe we said 11 June was that date. Those public comments also have to be summarized and presented to the board, and then the board, the GTLD program committee, needs to take action on those. So the timeline is intended to depict that that would happen in the second half of June. Again, I cannot speak on behalf of the board, but that is our current anticipation. Once the DAC advice is addressed and the registry agreement is approved, we anticipate we would move rapidly to applicant contract execution. Does that help, Jasmine?
Great. Thank you, Christine. I appreciate that. My final question relates to the auction process. Are you able to provide more clarity on the process and how you'll be processing applications through the auction process? The order, I understand it'll be in priority order, but will it be the priority number of the earliest or the latest in the contention set? Thanks.
I'm so sorry, Yasmin. We are having a terrible connection on this end. Could I ask you to repeat that again slower, and we'll try? Or you could type it into the question, public comment, not public comment, the Q&A pod. We don't need more public comments. The Q&A pod of the Adobe.
So I'll try one more time.
Okay.
Okay. Are you able to please provide more clarity regarding the auction process? So how exactly applicants will proceed through the auction process, in what order, and more clarity on the timing, please?
Oh, got that. Clarity around the auction process and the timing thereof.
Right, thanks.
Okay. Phew. So, unfortunately, I don't have a lot more information for you on the auction process beyond what we can all read from the guidebook. We anticipate that we could have auctions starting in the October timeframe. We are anticipating that we will wait until initial evaluation is complete. We will also have a mechanism by which applicants and all applicants in the contention set can contact ICANN requesting the ICANN auction. We will need to schedule auctions. We will need to there's a lot of administrative activity around the auction, and the service provider will be facilitating much of that activity. So, unfortunately, I don't have a lot more information. We anticipate that being available as early as October. The other thing I would say is if the provider is ready and ICANN is operationally ready to entertain auctions earlier, we would certainly consider that. So, thank you, Yasmin, so much for your question.
That's okay. Thanks for saying apologies for the issues.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Amadou Abriel. Please go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me? Is my line... Yes,
I can hear you, Andrea.
Okay.
How are you?
Quite well, thanks. Late at night in Europe. Hope you're enjoying your afternoon. Now, I have a couple of short procedural questions, one request for clarification, one short comment. The question for clarification on the timeline and the path, one is regarding the scroll providers. Is there any update about this procedure? Because, you know, we are supposed to start the beta testing now, and one part is a scroll, which is a third party for both the applicants and the registered service providers. And, you know, perhaps it's my problem of being a lawyer, but I don't like signing contracts with entities that I know that probably will be accredited and certified and accepted by ICANN as scroll providers, but I am not sure whether they really are or not. And, you know, this is a little bit strange, and I don't know whether you have any update on what's the situation here. The second one in the timeline as well is regarding what happens. I mean, both that pre-delegation test and contractual negotiation have been delayed by 2 months, right? It was from late April, beginning of May, to late June, beginning of July. Now, are we just moving everything 2 months and you will start still, you know, 20 per week? Or will we start something like 30 per week to somehow recover these 2 months that we are delayed because of contractual negotiations? The request for clarification is on GAC advice. And if I understood you correctly, we are responding to the board, not directly to GAC. Somehow my understanding, probably is my language limitations in English, is that we're supposed to respond, that is to address the issues that were on the concrete applications by GAC, not just to comment in general about the GAC. But if I understand you correctly, what we are supposed to do through the customer portal is just general comments and not just responding to GAC on the issues that might raise in any concrete category or concrete application. And the request is a request to please be in mind there are things like, for instance, the RPM requirements that are very important to have a clear idea of what the agreement, the registry agreement really means. They are somehow part of that, especially because what we've seen so far really changes some of the implications that we have in a specification 7. So we would like, I know that Karen and everybody is working very hard, but I would like urging to, you know, put more help and energy if necessary to have that document published as early as possible. Thanks.
Amadeo, thank you for your questions. You touch on a number of very important topics. So let me attempt to, I'm going to try to address these in reverse order. I'll start with the GAC advice, if I could. Just to be clear, the GAC provides advice to the ICANN board. The new GTLD guidebook, the applicant guidebook, describes a mechanism for applicants to respond to the ICANN board about GAC advice. So applicants are not responding to the GAC. The mechanism is to give applicants the opportunity to respond to the board about GAC advice. That response by applicants is not limited only to specific strings or applicants whose strings were explicitly called out in the GAC communique. Any applicant has the opportunity to respond to the board regarding GAC advice. And the mechanism to do so that we're offering, rather than having all of you send lots of letters to the board, which would only end up in my mailbox, frankly, but to offer you a formal mechanism via the customer service center and the applicant portal to give you a mechanism to provide that response. And we are collecting and collating those, and each and every one of those applicant responses will be provided to the board and the new GTLD committee for their review.
Good, but for instance, Christine, if you know somebody has 3 or 4 applications that are relatively similar, the mechanism seems intended to go application by application. But is there any point in sending four clones of responses on the same topics by a single applicant?
Amadeo, you're right. You can certainly submit one response that covers multiple applications.
Okay, thanks a lot. That clarifies one of my questions. Thanks.
Yes. We are not trying to create more paperwork or busy work for anyone.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Next, I'm going to get to your question about the delay in contracting. So you're right. Compared to the target date we had of signing contracts of 23 April, we're certainly delayed. The registry agreement was the subject of much discussion and debate, and ultimately the community response was so great that I can decided to publish the registry agreement for public comment. So, yes, it could be 2 months before a delay from the April 23rd date. At present, we are still contemplating the maintaining the idea of 20 delegations per week. We're not modifying that. That would have to be a decision made in conjunction with NTIA and Verisign to adjust the 20 per week delegation rate to achieve the 1,000 per year delegation limit. How we might, however, I think it's worth considering whether we might sign contracts at a more aggressive rate. However, the ICANN contract signature is effectively the gating factor for maintaining that ultimate delegation rate or the rate at which applicants go to IANA. So I will certainly take that comment back and let you know if perhaps we can discuss it in the contracting webinar in June. What our intentions are on that front. And finally, the third, first item was actually around data escrow providers and the need for registries and registrars to prepare with those data escrow providers. So as you know, we published the application and requirements for data escrow providers in, I believe, late March, early April. It was before Beijing. We have had two applicants, data escrow providers apply to become approved. We expect that we will have data escrow providers as well as standard agreements approved by next week. So that's moving forward very rapidly. We're very sensitive to the need to have data escrow providers in place. So, Amadeo, I hope that addresses all of your questions. Thank you so much for participating. I know it must be late there.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Jeff Newman. Please go ahead.
Hey, Christine. Can you hear me?
Yep. How you doing, Jeff?
Good, good. I got two questions because I think you you answered the escrow one that I had. The first question is, when do you expect coming out with the rules surrounding the 50 abused marks or the variations? When will those rules be finalized and released? And I can ask the second question is, if the board disagrees with some or all of the GAC advice, then is there a consultation period that is required to take place? And if so, when will that be? And then I guess the next part is, if there is a consultation, is the plan that it would only affect certain applications or all, would it hold up everything? So I guess those are my questions.
Oh, okay. So first was on the 50 abused names, and the second was on GAC advice. Well, let's talk about GAC advice. So you're asking me to look into the crystal ball there, I think.
Well, that's what, you know, you're a good program, you got good program managers, you have to plan for contingencies, right?
So, yes, we're certainly talking about all of the possible permutations of the board considering GAC advice. So, let's see, without speculating as to what the board might do, if the board were to accept GAC advice, we, you know, based on the schedule I've discussed, they could make some decisions by the end of June, is what my perhaps optimistic timeline shows. If there are components which the board doesn't accept, then they could possibly go into consultation with the GAC. There's, as I understand it, have not seen that in action, but I understand that's quite a lengthy timeline. So then I think the other part, the third part of your question is, could some, I think the root of the question is, could some applications proceed through the process while the board conceivably goes into consultation with the GAC on other portions of the advice? And I think that is conceivable. I don't think that it's, as I understand it, it's not an all or nothing game, that the board could accept portions of the GAC advice and consult or enter a dialogue on others. Clearly there is some advice that pertains to, like the safeguards that pertain to all applications, but other advice that is limited in scope that would not have as broad an impact. So I'm at this point, I'm optimistic. maybe I should just be hopeful is a better word. I know that the board is entertaining much discussion. In fact, there is they're meeting next week, and the new GTLD program committee is going to be discussing GAC advice next week at a workshop meeting. So moving on to the questions on the 50 abused variations of trademarks. So we're working with Deloitte on the implementation as to what data is submitted in relation to the additional domain labels and how the data is verified by the Trademark Clearinghouse, as well as the updates to the claims notice. We're targeting early June to publish this information.
Okay, then I guess the follow-up, though, if that's published in early June, when will the clearinghouse itself be operational, and when will they have the ability to pass that information onto the registries? In other words, we're just trying to figure out what delay that the implementation of those rules may cause, and whether something like that needs to go through any kind of public comment period, which I'm hoping the answer is no.
You're hoping no more public comment period?
Pretty much.
Yeah. I hear you on that. We don't anticipate that the implementation should affect the timeline at all. The implementation of the 50 abused names, yes, it affects the front end, the verification system that Deloitte operates. Because they have to have a mechanism to accept that. It's something they're thinking about. You know, this is not truly new information. We've had this on the radar for a while. And then from a functionality of the on the IBM side, it's really the claims process, at which point the abused names come into play. And claims are offered. So that's currently scheduled for August, and we anticipate that
we will affect that timeline.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I think we have one more in the phone queue. That's a time check. I have 4:22 on my clock, so we'll take one more call from the phone queue, and if we have time, then we'll go back to the Q&A pod.
Thank you, and our next question comes from the line of Jeffrey Smith. Please go ahead.
Hey, this is Jeff Smith. When we submit GAC advice, we're supposed to do it through the CRM portal, is that correct?
Yes, Jeff. When you submit your response to the board about GAC advice, you would submit that via the customer portal.
Okay, it's under maintenance, and do you know what the status of that is and when it's going to be back up?
So the customer portal has been migrated in the last month. I believe we went live on April 17th. From the previous Sugar CRM solution to Salesforce platform. Not that it's going to be noted, but not that you care about what software we're using. But just as you log in via Citrix, and then previously you had the option of either going into the TAS system to log in or going into the CRM system, you should have received an email to identify that there is a new customer portal. So if you're seeing a warning sign, a sign that shows the system is in maintenance, it's for the old CRM system. What I'd encourage you to do is to look in your email. You should have received an email around the April 16th or 17th notifying you of new login information to the customer portal. So if all you're seeing is the maintenance window, that would be an indication that you're looking at the wrong, the Sugar system.
Okay, so, I mean, is it possible for you guys to put up a link or something to the new system? So it would be, I mean, I understand emails, and when, you know, you get thousands, it just may help a lot if there's some sort of note there saying, you know, points, you know, it's been migrated somewhere else. But anyway, I appreciate that information, okay?
Okay. So the other thing my team is telling me on the sidelines here is that through the Salesforce website, there are occasionally pop-up windows that occur when you initially log in to notify you of upcoming maintenance windows. So upon first login, you may have a notification that pops up to tell you that there's an upcoming maintenance window. But if that's the case, then just click through that, and then you'll be into the portal on the customer service site.
Thanks so much.
Sure. So we have 4 more minutes. Let's see if we can get one or two more questions in, Frank.
Thanks, Christine. Question from Jim Prendergast. Have the results of the pilot program for PDT reported to either the applicants who participated or the community at large? If yes to community, where can they be found?
So, Jim, thank you for the question. The applicants that participated in the PDT pilot each received their own report of their results that went to the primary contacts for each of the PDT pilot participants. However, also in the PDT session in Beijing, we discussed the general themes and lessons learned from the pilot for the community as a whole, so that everyone could benefit from the learnings from the pilot.
Thanks, Christine. There's one question asking for clarification from Gerardo. Can you please clarify if you are expecting all applicants that got affected by the GAC advice to submit a reply in order to be able to continue in the process forward?
Excellent question. To be clear, no. Applicants are not required to submit a response to the board
in order to proceed. So if you, whether you were, your strain or application was particularly mentioned and called out in the GAC advice, or as all applicants were the subject of other aspects of the advice, you are not required. There's no requirement to respond to the board regarding GAC advice.
Thank you. Jim Pendergast, when applicants elect for the ICANN auction, do all applicants in the contention set have to agree to the timing? How do you schedule the actual auction?
So when applicants elect the auction, yes, we would anticipate all applicants have to agree to participate in the ICANN auction, for one. But final auction rules will definitely be published prior to beginning auctions, and the auction provider, I'm anticipating we may also have specific webinars or calls on auction processes specifically, because I think that there are a lot of details and nuances about the auction process that would merit a more in-depth discussion. So thank you, Jim, for the question. At this point, it's 4:29. I'd like to thank everyone who participated. I thank you to the team here who's supporting me. I anticipate we will be announcing next month's webinar shortly. We'll try to get you a little more advance notice of that. in the meantime, it looks like we'll have a contracting webinar in early June. So I look forward to ongoing conversations. Thank you all. Appreciate it. Bye now.